Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast.
This week, we have a very special expert here to tell us all about ball-jointed dolls. Introducing Dee, a longtime collector.
It's me. I bet you weren't expecting this.
So, Dee, tell us, what is a ball-jointed doll?
You are already getting into some sticky territory.
My understanding is that it was a resin doll of a certain scale, characterized by jointed limbs held together with string.
Yes, that is the most commonly accepted definition. Now, when you start getting into vinyl dolls with skeletons, a lot of people can't agree if those should be counted as BJDs or not, because they're not resin, but they are ball-jointed. BJDs don't have, like, a set sizing standard. They can actually come in pretty much any size, but they tend to fall into one of three categories. Generally defined by early ball-jointed doll maker Volks is the SD size for Super Dollfie, which is generally around one-third and can be 55 to 60 centimeters tall. The next, it is MSD for Mini Super Dollfie. These will be around 40 centimeters tall, give or take. And the Yo SD, which comes from the Japanese word for baby, so Baby Super Dollfie, and tend to stand at 26 or so centimeters, or kind of similar to Barbie height. For simplicity's sake, the three categories do tend to get called either large, mini, or tiny, with large accepting 50 centimeters to 70 centimeters, or you may have noticed that that's about 30 inches, which is huge. Minis being 36 to just under 50, so that would be the number 49. And tinies being anywhere from as small as you can conceive of to 35 centimeters.
And these are modern dolls, right? Not antique dolls?
They are modern. There are vintage Volks Super Dollfies, but yes, they are largely modern.
And what is the appeal of these dolls? What is the purpose for collectors?
What is very attractive about them is their range of motion, usually, and the fine handcrafting of the bodies, particularly the faces as well. The faces are all sculpted at some point by hand. Now it's more common to do like 3D sculpting. That's still by hand. I don't care what anyone says. They're all, you know, lovingly crafted, generally like turned into like these characters that you can buy with like full clothing and wigs and eyes. And it's just the quality and the attention to detail and the customizability.
So they're kind of like art pieces in a way.
They are very much art pieces.
Not toys for children.
Absolutely not toys. If you are rich, then it could be a toys for children. But the one thing about resin is that it does break.
And it's also a lot of small detachable parts, which would present a significant choking hazard, I feel.
It's very swallowable. Yeah, if kids are interested in jointed dolls, if it's the kind of the jointing that's got your kids attracted to it, there are a lot of dolls in the market now for children. Actually, the Rainbow High dolls, I really want one. They are extremely well jointed. They are safe for children. They are not very breakable. But yeah, a BJD is not for kids. They're so heavy.
So what got you in particular into ball-jointed doll collecting?
I read a lot of like Japanese horror, like anything, manga, like magazines, movies, yada yada. And once you like catch sight of the dolls that kind of feature into it, you are stricken by how different they are from even art piece dolls that you see generally in the US.
I didn't realize ball-jointed dolls had such a presence in the Japanese horror scene.
Yeah, I mean, dolls in general are just very scary, right?
I mean, yeah, anything that falls into the uncanny valley, as dolls so often do.
Yeah, and like, a ball-jointed doll is already like so much more realistic.
It's so much larger and so much more detailed.
Yeah, there's something about it already kind of looks creepy to some people, I think, because some of them do fall in uncanny valley, that it's really not a stretch to just say like, well, if anything was going to be haunted, it would probably be that thing.
And it's got all the joints necessary to hold a knife. And it's big enough to do it, too.
Boy, howdy. It's probably big enough to kill you if it just falls over, if you've got one of the bigger ones.
I mean, you do have a habit of storing very heavy antiques and collectibles on shelves that are, like, suspended over your head as you're sitting on your computer. That's not a sarcasm or a joke. That's literally how your house is set up.
That is just kind of how I put things up, yes.
And I know, because once a week... On our call, I get to hear you say, oh god, the corpse drainer tried to kill me again, because you have stored a corpse drainer over your head on a shelf in your house.
Yes. Well, I now have it in a drawer and it still hurt me.
Because it's definitely haunted.
Because it's absolutely haunted.
But yeah, so I didn't realize that horror was what got you into Ball Jointed Dolls, because, like, all the ones you've showed me were very sweet and fantastical and cute.
Yeah, and definitely, like, I'm not going to 100% lie to you and claim that it wasn't. It was anime, too. Like, you can only get so far into, like, being an anime kid before you run into these things.
Fair.
And as I remember, they were way... There was, like, a presence of them in, like, big anime nerd areas in, like, the 90s and the 2000s when we were coming up.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, how many people at Anime Boston have violin cases with their ball-jointed dolls inside?
Violin cases, absolutely everyone's favorite, yeah. It was violin cases and then these, like, lovingly handcrafted coffin cases. And everyone's dolls had trip pants.
Oh, those must be so fun.
I want one so bad.
Dee, I have a great, great news for you.
What?
You can make one of those. That is well within your capability.
Yeah, I really do want to, for my most specialist boy.
Who is your most specialist boy? Please introduce us.
I would like to clarify, I do keep my BJDs in a drawer. I have a lined, it's just my dresser drawer, but I keep them in there with some fabric so that they can't fall, because a lot of them I purchased as rehab projects, and it would kill me if they got any more broken. But my most specialist boy is the only one I bought new, my Fairyland Fairy Line Altus Fawn Legs boy. He has beautifully crafted jointed fawn legs.
Yeah, it is a very aesthetically pleasing sculpt, especially since, like, putting goat legs on an otherwise humanoid body is already difficult. Like, just drawing animal legs in general, knowing how they work together, and then bringing that into three dimensions, and then jointing it in a way where it can move and pose convincingly. Like, this really is a work of art.
It really is. Fairyland almost doesn't get enough credit, I think, for the engineering that goes into their fantasy sculpts, because it's extremely hard, and they do such a good job for it. Like, I'm not saying this to talk trash on other people's, like, fawn legs, because that is kind of like a sub-community. I actually really like resin soles. I'll probably own one someday if I ever have enough money. They come up on, like, junked a lot, and I really like fixing them up. So, like, but you look at Fairyland's legs, and you go, well, that's as good as it gets. That's beautiful. And they're centaur. Oh my god, I would love to own a Fairyland centaur someday.
Now, you mentioned that you tend to buy used, already broken dolls. Because for you as an artist, part of the joy is in fixing them up. How much would they cost you new?
Oh, several hundred dollars.
Okay, because that's... I realized we had not yet given our listenership that sense of scale.
Yeah, I'm going to beg everyone to not Google Altus Fairyland, because, like, you can, because at the time I had a very good job. I had several bonuses. It was fine. He's been paid off. He's not a financial burden on me.
He's an investment piece.
He actually is. They're worth quite a lot. I did sell his head for one quarter of what I paid for him in general. So, like, that gives you an idea.
Because, frankly, the head he came with, his legs beautifully sculpted. The head, very creepy.
It's a taste thing, and I'm with you in that I do not like the... So a lot of the early BJDs looked like little, like, baby dolls on purpose, right? They were kind of just big, artfully crafted dolls that still had the aesthetic of a baby doll.
They were also very strongly anime, too, where you have, like, the big eyes and the other features are very small.
Yeah.
Which tends to make everything look infantile.
Yeah. It's just taken them a very long time to move away from that aesthetically, especially Fairyland, which I would say has no adult-looking head sculpts. And that's fine if you're into it, but the body is adult and muscular with, like, defined pecs and abs, which makes slapping the cute little baby face on it, like, upsetting.
I'm just imagining, like, photoshopping a toddler head onto a bodybuilder body, which is essentially what this doll looks like in its natural form.
Do yourself a favor and Google Senior Delph Bory, B-O-R-Y, and you will hit the worst case I've ever seen of it.
Oh, man. But yeah, now a lot of independent artists I've noticed have been sculpting not only adult heads, but also very specific adult heads, such as Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I like how you started with the goodwill and slipped immediately into the bonkers.
Listen, okay, I am always going to be fascinated by the people who just make, like, 1/6 scale head sculpts of famous actors and then sell them for hundreds and thousands of dollars on the internet.
It's really something.
That will never not be fascinating.
You see a lot of artist dolls now, and I mean like a lot of artist dolls now, and that's because the twin technologies of 3D sculpting and 3D printing are now affordable to hobbyist level. So, you know, now more than ever, people really have the opportunity to like realize their vision for making their little artist dolls. And it's really exciting. I did replace Altus's head with an Angel Studio Nellis. It's beautiful. He looks like an adult man.
His head matches his body now.
The artists like really make up for aesthetic issues that you like you're not going to find from some like the big established, I say big companies. I don't want to give anyone the wrong idea. It's still like 4 or 5 people per.
Yeah.
But the bigger companies, like Nellis has like a beautifully Roman nose, which is kind of rare to find. They do stick to anime, little button noses. And as Ken introduced, you can get a head that looks like a celebrity. This is extremely common for a variety of reasons. There used to be a lot of BJD studios that would have printing services. If you sent them a blank, they would make copies for you. And it was a thing where you would get together in like these forums and meet the minimum order number to have them professionally cast for a blank you sculpted. And so there was a, like, pretty much every other week for a while, you could join a split and get yourself a head that looked like whatever celebrity du jour was popular at the time.
When the first Avengers came out, there was a lot of Tom Hiddleston heads, a lot of Robert Downey Jr. heads, a lot of Chris Evans heads, a lot of Chris Hemsworth heads.
Not a lot of any other characters.
Yeah, few people wanted Bruce Banner heads or Hawkeye heads, but... You know.
They're out there, but none of them made it to group orders, which I do think says something.
And then Hannibal came out, and I'm pretty sure I've seen a Mads Mikkelsen head floating around somewhere.
Actually, an artist I really like just finished their own take on Mads Mikkelsen, and it's my favorite so far.
He does have a very interesting face.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen is one of those people who is sexy despite how he looks.
Wow! Extremely rude!
No... You know what I mean by that, though. Like,
no, it's just he has features that are arranged in a way you don't usually see, which makes them compelling, and also very difficult to draw because it breaks everything you know about portrait drawing as a concept.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want anyone to think that I think Mads Mikkelsen is very attractive. He is not what you would call traditionally handsome.
No. But yeah, as the listener might have gathered, ball jointed dolls have parts that can essentially be swapped out and customized, which I think also adds to their appeal in a large way.
Yes, there are some people who are only into the hobby for doing, it's called hybrids, big surprise. Some people's whole game is just hybridizing because it's just fun, and there, it is both frustrating and fun. There is an element of it that is very randomizing because there is no set standard for size. So sometimes there's a lot of customizing that goes into like making hybrid parts fit.
Oh.
Especially with artist sculpts, which might have been made for a very specific. What I'm thinking of is there was a head that was available for the Fairyland Chic line body, which was made as like a turbo Barbie.
Okay.
It's bigger than Barbie, but smaller than a mini BJD. So the head doesn't fit on anything else. So if you have those heads, it's just like, you better sculpt your own body for it. There's no other scale quite like it.
And now, I know you have several custom projects going, but the one that sticks in my memory is you found someone who was selling just the tail of a Naga ball-jointed doll. So it's just this, like, snake scale that would attach to a human waist. And your mission, as I understand it, is to find a Stone Cold Steve Austin action figure that will fit for the upper half. So you can truly make him into a Texas rattlesnake?
Yes.
I'm so glad we're friends.
The part is a Sugar Bowl Naga tail. I think Sugar Bowl is the best name a BJD company's ever had.
Yes. Very on brand.
They focus on tinies. So anything kind of under 35 centimeters. And the tail is in a really weird spot for, like, you know, common BJDs you'd find now. It's in a really good spot for larger action figures. So if I just find the right proportion of Stone Cold Steve Austin, it'll be a little bit of sculpting and he will fit on this Naga tail. And it does have a little rattler, so he will be the Texas rattlesnake. And I hope nobody gets mad at me for that because it is now a rare, hard to find part. I will not be damaging that part in any way for this hybrid project. I might dye it, so sorry about that, but that's removable.
Again, just one of the many customization options available with resin, because creativity is such a big part of this hobby because you can buy the dolls just blank with no paint on them or nor dye for cheap. And then you can also buy what are called face-ups, which is where you hire the artist to paint realistic flesh tones and features onto it.
Yep, most companies actually retain their own face-up artists. And when they release dolls, frequently there will be kind of like limited sets that will have the company face-up. So it'll be like a standard makeup done for it. But if that isn't to your tastes, if, you know, just something about it doesn't appeal to you, you can get the doll blank and have just any other artist paint it for you. There are a number of what you'd consider like celebrity face-up artists. People who make like their living on doing doll face-ups, basically.
Because it is like airbrush onto resin and just getting it into a way where it looks convincingly like, you know, skin and lips and all that jazz is truly an art.
There are some people who use airbrushes. I mean, that is a really good look. It's very great for skin tones. Most people actually use soft pastels.
Oh my god, that's even harder.
It's even worse, right? Yeah. I wanted to double down on, like, if you look this up, the respect you would have for these people. Because it's usually a combination of soft pastels for, like, large color areas, watercolor pencils for detail work that doesn't have to be very fine, and then acrylic or sometimes very pigmented watercolor for the hard details like eyebrows and eyelashes.
Man, these dolls, man. Now, circling back to the snake tail being a very expensive piece, now worth a lot. One, that's because of all the joints that go into it. Two, it's not made anymore, is it? Like, no one else is currently producing this tail.
No.
So what did you pay for it and how much is it going for now?
I paid, I believe at the time it was $80. Again, I had a good job at the time. Don't at me. I did actually like a lot of trading back and forth for things. This is not one of them. I did pay money for this one. Last I saw, someone was offering literally whatever I'd ask.
Whatever asking price you set.
Yeah.
Up into the thousands.
Yeah. Which I would be ridiculous. And I think actually there would be a point where they'd be like, now you're just being stupid. But I've kind of seen them hover around like $300 to $500, depending on condition.
So I know we always talk about how collectibles are never investment pieces, but sometimes I question my stance on that because sometimes this happens.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, you started this by rightfully pointing out that these are more art objects. So when you think of it from the perspective of, we always say art is the one thing that can be a solid investment. Because these are artisan made, and there is a natural limit to their lifespan. Most companies do just discontinue sculpts when the mold breaks, for example.
When they literally break the mold.
They literally break the mold, yeah. And they could, of course, create new masters, but there's issues with shrinkage and detail loss at that point. And like you also pointed out, things like the fantasy tails are heavier, they're more expensive to produce. It might have just been that in the long run, this wasn't making them the money they needed to. So what would be the point in redoing all of the molds again? So they just discontinued them. And that discontinuation creates a market.
Because the tail is broken up into how many segments?
I have not counted.
Enough to make a fully posable snake tail. So just like picture that in your head.
I think it's somewhere between 40 and 60 individual pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is bonkers.
It's a lot to take. And again, it's pretty small too. So the engineering at that scale is even more impressive.
It is a really cool piece. So what would be your dream ball-jointed doll?
Oh, this is tough. My dream ball-jointed doll. I am torn between the Soom Zinc Archer Centaur. I don't know if they still have the mold. They have never re-released him in, like, quite a while. An SD-sized centaur doll. If you're getting the idea that I like the fantasy creatures more, then you're correct.
Well, because it's also very few other dolls are made in this way.
Yeah.
Like, there are very few other doll companies doing centaurs and nagas and fauns.
Yeah. It's huge. The thing is over 80 centimeters tall, including the horse legs. I think someone told me that it weighs in at about 30 pounds all put together.
Damn.
By the way, if you're going with a large doll, weight is actually a consideration. I have seen people go for large dolls because they like the scale, because they like the sculpting or the character, and then sell them because they just can't handle them comfortably.
Yeah, you do have to be, like, hoisting this thing to, like, pose it and display it and, like, carry it to meet and greets and all that.
Yeah. Now, when you say dream doll, is that of the ones that are, like, in existence, or can I, like, make one up here?
I would say first tell me which one you would currently be saving for, and then tell me the one you would sell the Naga tail for if it existed.
So currently existing, definitely between the Zinc Sum Centaur Boy, because he was huge and amazing and I love everything about it.
Fully posable horse legs. Look at a horse's legs. I dare you. Try to imagine what it's like to draw them. Now we'll try to imagine what it's like to render them in three dimensions. Now try to imagine rendering them in three dimensions and making it fully posable and still convincing.
Yeah, yeah. That is a good way of looking at how difficult they are to make.
Yeah, like there's a reason these things cost money.
My other option would probably be there is a Russian independent artist who makes Argonian-based doll.
Ah, based on the race of lizard people from Morrowind.
Yeah. Yeah, the sculpt is called Sahit, S-A-H-I-T. I believe the artist actually casts them themselves so that the price is up there, although I will say extremely fair when you consider how much work goes into it. I think it's around $500.
Again, fully posable, convincing lizard person.
Yeah, handmade, like they're doing all the resin casting, which means casting each individual part.
Each individual joint.
And then mixing the resin to the right color every time, every single joint, yeah. It's a marvel. I think $500 is actually extremely cheap when you consider that amount of work. I have considered multiple times actually doing it because they do offer layaways. She's beautiful. And then the third runner-up would be the Venetu, the doll she Venetu.
What is that one?
It's just a dude, an adult man. The two like headpieces that came with it are pleasingly adult with really striking features. There's sort of like a Western looking one. We, you know, he's got the double folded eyelids and a very strong nose and strong jaw. And there was also an Asian looking one, but with just like really striking eyes and a mouth set like you wouldn't believe. And they're just gorgeous. Like the musculature and the jointing and the way the limbs look, so pleasing. I don't think I've ever seen in like an adult man BJD that looks quite as good as the Venetu. They are discontinued, and I believe base price for them is like $1,000.
Well.
Yeah, so I don't know that I would ever really own one unless like a really junked up one came up and I had a good job.
Now, the fantasy piece. The piece that does not yet exist, but you really wish did.
That's tough. You know what? I don't know. Oh, shit.
You're the one who told me to ask you that.
I know, and I thought I had an answer, but I'm breaking down now. Are you familiar with Warframe?
Nope.
Something like Warframe. So Warframe features characters that are like bio-organic robots with like cool robot heads.
Right.
And surprisingly, there aren't that many robot BJDs.
I guess Transformers cornered the market.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess if you're into robots, you're just going to Transformers.
Or Gundam. You're just assembling Gundam.
Yeah, you know, there is the Ex Machina BJD is very beautiful. I don't know that it's my thing exactly. It's a little too human for me. But I would like a really alien, any kind of really alien robot, but with like bioorganic elements and a non-human head.
All right, so you want a biomechanical alien.
Yes, with a cool screen head. Oh, and maybe if the cool screen head is actually wired up for like LEDs and like that's its eyes.
There you go. Now, I would like to ask you a little bit about the controversy surrounding recasts.
Whew. This one is actually fairly easy because I find very little gray area on this.
Now, what is a recast?
A recast is, it's a bootleg in every definition of the word. It is usually people who will get a hold of the sculpt. So they'll buy, say, a Venetu. And they did do this, unfortunately. And they will make new molds based on it, and usually using cheap labor and with connections to cheaper sources of like resources like resin. They just make fake copies.
So they're just buying a doll and then making their own mold off that doll and selling reprints of it, essentially.
Yeah, at extreme discounts. It's kind of the difference between an artisan making it in a mass market thing.
Yeah.
The problem with it that I have that I don't with other bootlegged toys is that there aren't any large companies to hurt doing this. It's all small artisan groups.
Yeah, you're always hurting a small collection of artists when you do it.
Unfortunately, there is no, like, ethical way to do it. You are always hurting, like, real people, real artists who care about this stuff. most companies don't even turn a huge profit on these dolls because the cost of producing them is astronomical, which is why the prices are so freaking high, of course, and the profit margin is not as big as you think it is looking at the price tags originally. So people, I would say with a certain amount of correct-mindedness, hate recasts and the people who buy recasts knowingly. It's a big deal. You will be completely ostracized from any community involving it because it's like the biggest no-no you can do.
And there is a very strong Baldwin doll collector community, both online and when it's safe in person at conventions and what have you.
Yeah, conventions used to be, I think, the number one way people got into it is because a lot of folks would take their prized dolls and carry them around like little children. I personally would love to do that when it's safe.
Yeah.
So there's a thriving community. You do have to be in the community to get anywhere if you want to keep going. Like, especially if you're getting into buying and selling. It is surprisingly strict in terms of keeping an eye on people who are known to be scammers and recasters. So, you know, it is kind of compulsory that you join in so that you can get vetted, so to speak. And that is annoying to a lot of people who get started, but I definitely see the point. Because by keeping it really tight, you really can, like, point out outliers who are doing things that are illegal and harmful a lot faster. Sometimes you can actually narrow down on who's doing the selling to the recasters, because recasters will offer huge finder's fees if you will sell them something.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's shitty and wrong. And, like, I get it, they're expensive and everyone wants to be in it, but, like, do what I do and get into buying used, busted up dolls and fixing them. It's wonderful. I have purchased dolls for $30 and $60, whole dolls that are actually really great and just needed some minor cosmetic work. I think that's a much better option than getting into recasting. The problem is that it's got a huge problem in that recasters are so omnipresent and sell on these platforms like Alibaba and, what's the other one I'm thinking of?
Wish?
Yeah, like Wish. Like Chinese and Japanese, like, wholesale outlets. That they're easier to find than legitimate BJDs.
Which is a shame.
A lot of people go looking and the first thing they find is actually, I think BJD.com is a recast shop.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it's the first place I ended up. It's the first place I wound up when I was checking things out, too. It's really easy to get suckered into it without knowing fully what is actually happening. And, like, the recasters are pleasant enough people, you might actually think that you're supporting a doll maker. But you're not. My number one suggestion is to just head over to denofangels.com. It's also pretty, like, I guess it's kind of controversial because they are very strict, but like I said, that strictness does serve a purpose. And I haven't had any problems. I do most of my business there. It's great because I have, you can build up like a feedback, like a really strong feedback that you can use on any other like doll website. It's very legitimate. Yeah, you can get a lot of heat for being, like, pro-recast. And I guess there's a lot of moral gray area about what happens when people end up with these things by accident. Like, what do you do then? And I don't have any... we're doing a whole episode on this. I'm afraid I don't have any... Actually, Ken, I'm kind of curious to see what you think.
I don't have an opinion. I don't do this shit.
The issue is that people think that if you allow people to participate in the greater doll community with recasts, even if they were purchased with good intentions and without knowledge that they were doing something wrong, it will only encourage people to look at recasts as a viable option. I don't know that I agree with that. I think if someone's mom was internet savvy enough to get online but not enough to figure out like a legit versus a recast doll, I don't think that they should be ousted from like any form of communicating with people. But I also think that when you get into, like, places that are specifically for recast owners, it gets really bad really quick in regards to when is it okay to steal from people. But, like I said, it's so complicated.
So, if someone were looking to get into Baldwin Dolls, you would recommend Den of Angels?
Den of Angels is great. They have a lot of really basic information stickied. I've seen people complain that they're not nice to newbies. That has never been I have never had that experience. I came in asking a lot of dumb questions that it turns out I could have found answers to if I knew how to use search functions better.
But they were still very kind and polite towards you?
They were all very polite, pointed me to the right threads to look up. I have had a great time. I think Den of Angels is, like, my number one, like, place to go. They actually have, like, archives of different dolls. They have threads and threads on threads on, like, identifying recasts if you're buying secondhand. Like I said, they have a kind of a rating system on what sellers are better than others, and sellers who are found to be shitty get banned pretty quickly. So it is like the safest place to do business. And you can just learn everyone's ticks and tricks and tips. There are like separate forums for all the different like avenues you can use for customization, like sewing, painting, sculpting, using a Dremel to fucking sand off their ears. And there's a lot. I think it's where everyone lands first, which is why it's so full of information. So denofangels.com, definitely.
Final thoughts on ball jointed dolls?
It's so weird. I love it. I think if you wanted to know if it's something for you, first ask yourself if you like dolls. If the answer is no, then I don't really know why you had any second thoughts. I would watch some videos of people doing the face-ups because that is 100% what got me really excited about it. I'm still not great at face-ups, but it is very fun to try, and the beautiful thing about them is you take a little brush cleaner and wipe it off and try again. I would watch a lot of videos of people doing like reviews and talking about their customizations, and if you start getting excited about the thought of doing that, then it's for you, and you can start looking into however you can gain access. Best place to look for if you want a cheap doll, like I said, Resin Soul is awesome. I think their sculpts are really cool and pretty for their low price point, and they are legitimate, made by actual artisans.
Right on. If you would like to show us your ball-jointed dolls, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or you can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
And please do, I love to see people's dolls. If you liked to listen to us talk about collectible and investable dolls, why don't you scroll on down to wherever you're listening to this and leave us a review. It doesn't have to be a good review, although we do prefer them. Any review helps get our dulcet tones into a variety of ears.
We got a lovely review recently from JG185HHUIJ, which is certainly a name.
The family name, I see.
Pure fun and learn something too. Always funny. And if you're interested in antiques and history, this is the best podcast.
Aww. Oh, that's so nice.
Ken and D, keep up the good work and thanks.
Thank you.
So sweet.
You the realist, JG Wentworth and some syllables.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, watch Drag King Readings by Guy Alias of our Victorian fashion guide, The Gentleman's Art of Dressing with Economy. Or if you would like to join us on the thrilling ride that is The Penny Dreadful, Varney the Vampire, or The Feast of Blood through our bonus episodes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
Thank you.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.